This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. Today, I'm talking about what may be a new concept to many of my listeners, and that is the idea of design thinking. Now, I must admit, I'm pretty new to this as well. I first heard about design thinking about a year ago, and for the past year, I have been researching this area of pedagogy because it has become an area of pedagogy now, and I have been utilizing it and playing with it and experimenting with it in the classroom. And today, I have distilled my thoughts into a blog post, which I will read to you and add my commentary on the way. So the title of today's podcast episode is What is Design Thinking and How Can It Be Used in Classroom Teaching? Incredibly interesting. I'm going to read the blog post to you, which you can find at richardjamesrogers.com. Once again, that's richardjamesrogers.com. And I will add my own comments along the way. So here we go. In the rapidly evolving landscape of education, traditional teaching methods are being reshaped by innovative approaches that prioritize creativity, problem solving, and collaboration. And many of you will remember that one of the hallmarks of deep learning, as opposed to surface learning, is problem solving. One such methodology gaining traction is design thinking. Originally conceived in the realm of product design, design thinking has found its way into education, offering a dynamic framework for educators to foster critical thinking and innovation among students. So it sounds brilliant, right? And it is a very good framework, actually. In today's podcast episode, we're going to explore what design thinking is and how it can be effectively applied in classroom teaching. So let's begin with the fundamental question: what is design thinking? Well, design thinking is a human-centered problem-solving approach that places empathy for the end user at the core of the creative process. Now, you might hear that and think, okay, I've switched off already. Empathy, how is that practical? How is that going to become a learning methodology? Bear with me and stay with me, everybody, because you'll see it's a process and the empathy part of it is just the start, and it's actually an important part. Coined by David Kelly and Tim Brown of IDEO, this methodology has since transcended its origins in design and has been embraced across various fields, including education. The key stages of design thinking typically involve, listen to this now, everyone, empathizing, defining the problem, ideating, prototyping, and testing. Next part. How can design thinking be used in classroom teaching? Well, I have come up with a useful acronym to help teachers understand the stages of design thinking. And I'm quite proud because I think I'm the only person anywhere to have come up with this. So I hope it's helpful. I hope it's useful. So the acronym is EDIPT, E-dipped, E-dipped. EDIPT. What does that stand for? Well, they're the different stages of design thinking. E is for empathize, D is for define, I is for ideate, P is for prototype, and T is for test. So EDIPT, EDIPT, empathize, define, ideate, prototype, and test. Let's go through each stage one by one. E for empathize. Design thinking encourages educators to understand their students on a deeper level by empathizing with their needs, challenges, and perspectives. By gaining insights into students' lives, again, insight into students' lives, everyone. What have I been talking about for many, many years now? Professional intelligence. The more you know about your students, obviously we're talking about non-confidential information, such as their hobbies, their interests, their preferred learning methodologies, how they respond to different types of feedback. All of this professional intelligence can be utilized by educators to design their lessons effectively. Educators can tailor their learning and teaching methodologies to address individual preferred learning methods and needs, and the preferred modes of instruction that each student have. And different students do learn in different ways. Let's not forget that. Next is define. The second stage of design thinking involves clearly defining the problem at hand. Notice it says the problem at hand. So this is a little bit different to defining a lesson objective. We're defining the problem that we want the students to solve, okay? In a classroom setting, this translates to identifying the challenges faced by students. This step sets the foundation for targeted and effective teaching strategies. Next is I for ideate. So we've done E, we've done D. Next is I for ideate. Design thinking encourages a culture of brainstorming and creative thinking. In the classroom, this means fostering an environment where students feel free to express their ideas without fear of judgment. Educators can facilitate brainstorming sessions to generate diverse solutions to educational challenges. It's so important that students are put into groups where they can have time to think about the problem and think about how to solve that problem. And I think another great advantage of design thinking, which I actually didn't mention in this blog post, is that over time, it allows students and causes students to see problems as actually solution opportunities. And I think that stands them in good stead for life, because everybody in life comes across problems, comes across bad news, comes across disappointments. Oftentimes they're not caused by us. Sometimes, of course, they are caused by us. But whenever we approach or have a problem in life, we need to be focusing on solutions. And I think design thinking, as well as being an excellent teaching and learning methodology, is also a great way to train students to become problem solvers, and not just academic problem solvers, but looking at any problem they have in life as a solution opportunity. So we've done E, we've done D, we've done I. Next is P. P is for prototype. Just as designers create prototypes to test their ideas, students can develop prototypes of their learning solutions. This might involve creating projects, presentations, or interactive activities that demonstrate their understanding of a concept. Prototyping allows for hands-on learning and experimentation. And finally, we've done E, we've done D, we've done I, we've done P. What's next, everyone? Do you remember? Of course, it's T, T for testing. Design thinking emphasizes an iterative process. In education, this means encouraging students to gracefully receive feedback on their work, reflect on their learning experiences, and make improvements. The iterative cycle fosters a growth mindset and resilience in the face of challenges. And again, that's going to stand these students in good stead as they become adults and they face the wider challenges of life. Now, let's look at an example, a real example, okay? Because it's all right me theorizing about EDIPT, but what does that look like in a real lesson or a real classroom setting? Well, let's say the subject is high school biology, and the lesson is adapting to a changing environment, a design thinking exploration. The objective is that students will use the design thinking process, EDIPT, to propose and prototype innovative solutions for an organism's adaptation to a changing environment. So number one, empathize. Begin the lesson with a short video or reading about a species facing environmental challenges, e.g. climate change or habitat loss. Engage students in a discussion about the impact on the species, their ecosystem, and the challenges they might face. The outcome of this first empathize process is that students develop empathy for the organisms and understand the need for adaptations in response to environmental challenges. So with this, everyone, we see why the empathy is so important. Because through empathizing, it is only then that the students have a clear idea of what the problem actually is that they need to solve. And I do think that, again, this is one of those soft skills I keep talking about that humans are very good at. And AI at the moment is not able to replicate. And that is, of course, empathy. And these soft skills that we're teaching our students are going to become more and more in demand as we go into the future, as AI takes over more and more roles that humans play at the moment. So that would be E. So one more time, we've began the lesson with a short video and students, or a short activity, and students are learning about an organism that is facing a challenge. And they are empathizing with that situation in order to understand what the problem is. Now, stage two is define. So an activity might be guide the students in identifying specific challenges faced by the chosen species due to the changing environment. Encourage them to narrow down their focus to one key problem. Very important, one key problem that they want to address. Now, the outcome of this is that students articulate a clear definition of the problem, such as the impact of temperature changes on the species' reproduction or food sources. So we've gone from empathizing with the organism's environment and habitat loss and climate change and the problems they face to very clearly defining the parameters of one problem. Stage three, do you remember what stage three is? It's ideate. Ideate, I for ideate. So the activity could be to conduct a brainstorming session where students generate various ideas for how the species could adapt to the identified challenge. Encourage creative thinking and diverse solutions. Now, the outcome of this is that students compile a list, potentially, of potential adaptations, considering biological, behavioral, or physiological changes the species might undergo. So, again, we see how that collaboration is very important in the design thinking process. Stage four, do you remember what stage four is, everyone? It's prototype. P for prototype. So in small groups, the students now choose one of the adaptation ideas that they've come up with. So let's think what's happened. They've defined one problem. They've brainstormed ideas to solve that problem. And now they're going to prototype one of those ideas, okay? So they're going to create a prototype or model showcasing how the species might implement this adaptation. This could include drawings, diagrams, or even a physical representation like a model, for example, or a simulation of some kind, or a scratch animation or something. The outcome is that each group produces a prototype that visually represents their chosen adaptation solution. And then the final stage, EDIP, T for test. Groups present their prototypes to the class, explaining the rationale behind their chosen adaptations. Facilitate a class discussion where students provide constructive feedback and ask questions. And that's why it's a T for testing process, because the idea is being presented to an audience and the audience are encouraged to critically reflect on that. And then, of course, after that, you would want the students to refine and remodel and to play around with their solution based on the feedback they've received. The outcome is, like I've just said, the students refine, that's a good word, students refine their prototypes based on feedback, considering the practicality and effectiveness of their proposed adaptations. Can you think of a suitable topic that would lend itself well to an EDIPT lesson, an EDIPT lesson in your subject area? I can think of many for mathematics and chemistry. Just mathematics off the top of my head, some kind of project involving the construction of a tower block in a big city and the surface area of the different offices in that building related to the cost of building materials. That's a great project right there. I'm sure there's many ways in which this can be applied in your subject area. I think it's important to mention with any new methodology or new idea in teaching, we don't expect teachers, and I don't think anyone expects teachers, to use this methodology or any particular methodology every single lesson. An EDIP lesson for me, I would do that maybe once every 2 weeks in my current practice, just to get those students collaborating, to change things up a little bit, to encourage deep learning as opposed to surface learning. And I think as educators, we have to be mindful that there are so many ideas out there that can inform our teaching and help us with our job. But we have to use a variety of methods, and it's impossible to do all of the different pedagogical techniques that exist in one lesson. You might want to be doing design thinking for one lesson, and the next lesson might be some other kind of inquiry-based instruction. The lesson after that might be some kind of experimental work. The lesson after that might be a traditional lesson where you're delivering content and getting students to answer questions and provide feedback. The lesson after that might be a past paper exploration lesson. The lesson after that might be a spatial learning lesson. So it is important, I think, especially for newly qualified teachers, to remember that it's not just important to have variety within one lesson, but it's important to have variety on a lesson-to-lesson basis as well. So as you're looking at your lesson plans for the week ahead, and I do encourage teachers to plan at least a week ahead with lessons, despite what the critics might say about lessons changing as the week goes by. We know that. We know you might not get through everything you plan in one lesson, but at least plan for the week ahead. Because you're going to be much clearer about variety spread over that week. And I think that a lot of teachers don't get that message. I think we understand as educators that every lesson should be varied. And by that we mean that within one lesson, there should be three or four different activities. But I think the message isn't clear enough that spread over a course of time, such as a week or 2 weeks or a month, there should be variety from lesson to lesson in terms of the methodologies we're using as well. Okay, the conclusion of all this is that design thinking in classroom teaching is a powerful tool for cultivating a generation of creative, adaptable, and empathetic individuals. By integrating this methodology, we can transform traditional classrooms into dynamic spaces where students are not just recipients of knowledge, but active participants in their own learning journey. Embracing design thinking in education is not just about preparing students for the future, it's about empowering them to shape it. Wow. Wow, what an inspirational way to end that blog post. Some further reading you might want to consider. Three books which I absolutely love on this topic of design thinking. I've read all three of them and they all have great ideas. So the first one is by Lee, 2018, and that's called Design Thinking in the Classroom, Easy to Use Teaching Tools to Foster Creativity, Encourage Innovation, and Unleash Potential in Every Student. That's quite a title, I have to admit. So that's published by Ulysses Press in Berkeley, California. Then there's Jake's D, 2022. Short title, that one's called The Design Thinking Classroom. That's a really, really practical book, by the way, that one. And then you've got DM Arvind Malik, 2019, Design Thinking for Educators, and that's by Notion Press. Three very good books about how to use design thinking in the classroom. And I strongly recommend, if you're serious about changing the lives of your students for the better and improving your teaching practice, you can do a lot worse than to start with one of those books. So thank you very much, everyone. I hope this was an interesting and informative podcast episode. If you're interested in a general book about classroom management, then check out my award-winning, best-selling book for teachers. Shameless plug, I know. And it's called The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. And that's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Blackwells, everywhere you get good books. Just Google me, everyone. Just Google me, Richard James Rogers. Google my name and you'll find my books on there. As I mentioned, the award-winning book that I wrote is called The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. If you have a topic request for me, feel free to email me at info@richardjamesrogers.com. Well, everybody, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure making today's podcast episode. Until next time, bye-bye for now.